and welcome to the MJA podcast. My name's Kate Swanell, and I am your world-weary host. Medicinal cannabis is a topic that continues to provoke heated debate on all sides. While that ricochets back and forth on Twitter, researchers are plugging on, adding to the evidence base. Three new studies on medicinal cannabis are published in the MJA today. They're all open access and available at mja.com.au. And yes, our loins are girded for the social media onslaught. One of the authors, Dr. Jeremy Freeman, is a consultant neurologist at the Royal Children's Hospital, Melbourne, and he's with me today to talk about his most recent study. We know that there's been some good research about cannabidiol and Dravet syndrome and Lennox-Gastaut. What is the evidence gap in terms of cannabis use for the treatment of other forms of epilepsy in kids?
So there's, of course, many different epileptic syndromes in children, and the Dravet syndrome and the Lennox-Gastaut syndrome are two of very severe forms. They're considered epileptic encephalopathies, and many of those children have drug-resistant epilepsy, whereas most pediatric forms of epilepsy are not drug-resistant and,
right,
in fact, respond very nicely to our usual anticonvulsant medications. The children with Dravet and Lennox-Gastaut, because they're drug-resistant, they tend to take a number of anti-seizure medications to reduce their seizure frequency, with the aim being to improve their quality of life and minimise injury, minimise hospitalisation. But the expectation in those children is not for complete seizure freedom. When using cannabidiol in Dravet syndrome and Lennox-Gastaut, it's always in addition to other medications. And
yep,
that's one source of a gap of evidence. We don't have evidence that cannabidiol is an anticonvulsant in the absence of the other medication. Hasn't been studied in that way. And for lots of other epileptic syndromes, there's a lack of evidence.
So tell us a bit about the study you decided to do and how you put it together and how it was designed.
So this came out of a compassionate access scheme that was initiated by the Victorian Government and Department of Health and Human Services, who wanted to provide cannabidiol for children with severe epilepsies. So it wasn't a research project as such, but because the product that was being used is not a product that's been used before in the not the exact product, we thought it was necessary to sort of monitor, particularly for side effects. So it was open label treatment of children with severe epilepsy who met eligibility criteria that was set by the department, monitoring those children closely for adverse effects, and along the way seeing how many of them stayed on treatment and how many came off treatment. So it wasn't a research study,
right,
so to speak, but it's obviously important when prescribing something that's an experimental unregistered product to record all adverse effects, and there's an obligation to report those to the Therapeutic Goods Administration, and so we did that, as well as collating all of the information for this series.
How many kids did you end up following in this series?
So in this series describes 20 children who were treated between February and November of last year.
And were they kids with drug-resistant epilepsy that wasn't Dravet and Lennox-Gastaut? Or?
So looking at this sort of epilepsy that they had, they were all drug resistant, yes. They had to have failed a number of anticonvulsants or other treatments before, and had to have daily seizures or admissions for seizures within the previous year. So they're all severe. 12 out of the 20 had Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. There weren't patients with Dravet syndrome in this group, because most children with Dravet syndrome don't have daily seizures.
Right.
So the group, in fact, studied by overseas by Davinsky and colleagues who had very frequent convulsive seizures is really the most severe end of the spectrum of Dravet syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And most children with Dravet syndrome will have status epilepticus and probably have hospitalizations or at least emergency department presentations for seizures within 12 months, but we didn't have any of those patients in this group. So there were other forms of epileptic encephalopathy severe forms of epilepsy that we had.
What kind of doses of cannabidiol were these kids getting in this particular series?
So we started with a dose of 5 milligrams per kilo per day of cannabidiol in 2 divided doses and increased that every week by the same amount up to a maximum of 20 milligrams per kilo per day.
And was that on top of their usual drugs or...?
In addition to their usual medications.
Right. And what kind of results did you see?
Okay, so we were particularly concerned with monitoring for adverse effects, not having used this particular formulation of cannabidiol before or elsewhere. We firstly, didn't achieve the target dose in all of those patients.
So right.
13 out of 20 achieved the target dose, and 7 achieved a lower target dose of between 10 and 17.5 milligrams per kilo per day. One of those children was because they stopped having seizures and so didn't increase the dose, and the other children was because of treatment-emergent adverse effects. The most common of those were somnolence, nausea or vomiting, anorexia or increase in appetite. But the most common side effect was somnolence, and that was particularly, although very small numbers, but it was particularly seen in children who were also taking clobazam, which is a benzodiazepine anticonvulsant medication. It's known that cannabidiol strongly inhibits the metabolism of one of the active metabolites of clobazam called N-dimethylclobazam. Levels of N-dimethylclobazam in children taking clobazam and cannabidiol can be several fold higher as a result of that drug interaction. So in all the other studies of using cannabidiol in children with drug-resistant epilepsy, that's been noted. In fact, even in the randomized controlled trials, double-blind trials, doses of clobazam tended to be reduced more often in the children taking cannabidiol than in the children taking placebo.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Jeremy Freeman, a consultant neurologist at Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne. Jeremy's research letter can be found at mja.com.au. Like all research we publish, it's open access.
It's very hard to judge efficacy in a just an open label prescribing situation, but of the 20 children, 11 of them continued treatment, and by the time that we collated the data, the treatment duration was between 17 and 40 weeks. So that's 11 out of 20. The other 9 children discontinued, one because of an adverse event, and the other 8. Because the treatment hadn't been effective.
Were you surprised by any of the results or any of the adverse events?
No, because there was quite a lot of information from the use of a different formulation of the product made by a different company with the same active ingredient, cannabidiol, but a different excipients, I guess, or different oil. And in open label use of that product, the side effect profile was remarkably similar to what we saw. What was nice about this, our experience with this product, is that it seemed to have very similar profile in terms of side effects and in open label use, even efficacy.
How do you use cannabidiol now in your clinical practice? And will that change as a result of what you know now?
It won't. The main issue for prescription cannabidiol is that at the moment it's very difficult to come by. It's more an issue of the cost of the product than the use of it, although they're definitely to have experience with the use of it and know what short-term side effects need to be mitigated is important, and potential for drug interactions. But I think the main issue is cost. And so at the moment, all of the pharmaceutical cannabidiol used in Australia is imported, not locally produced. There are a couple of companies that make purified cannabidiol. The one that's been used in the controlled trials is made by GW. It's called Epidiolex, and that's really only available in compassionate schemes that are paid for by governments in New South Wales and Queensland, whereas what we've been using is made by a Canadian company called Tilray. That's, I guess, more widely available, and that's being used in Victoria and Tasmania, for example.
If somebody said to you, are the benefits of cannabidiol worth the costs and the effort you have to go to get it? would you say it was?
Yes, I think for these children who've tried all of the other appropriate medication, it's definitely worth having a trial. I mean, if you're asking me about whether it's cost-effective, I don't think we have that information, and I think that's a little subjective. Certainly the parents of these children appreciate the opportunity that they've had in trying it, and we're now able to try it on a few more children. It is definitely prohibitive in terms of cost if a family was going to, you know, meet the cost themselves. Yeah. I think we have now in paediatric neurology many treatments emerging for a variety of different conditions. New treatments are often very expensive, and yep. so governments have to make difficult decisions about whether or not to subsidise those treatments. One of the things that we weren't expecting, that you asked me about surprises, but one of the things that I hadn't expected because it hadn't necessarily been reported before is that one of our patients with tuberous sclerosis complex was taking a medication called sirolimus, which is an mTOR inhibitor. The levels of sirolimus in that child were markedly elevated. And that's something that you probably could have predicted from knowing a bit about the pharmacokinetic interactions and the metabolism of sirolimus, but it's been an exclusion in other trials of cannabidiol that a patient's taking an mTOR inhibitor. Although, you know, those trials are just kind of underway, and so previous reports of children taking cannabidiol for treatment of tuberous sclerosis-associated epilepsy hadn't really mentioned that none of the patients were taking sirolimus or what had happened to their mTOR inhibitor levels. We were caught a little unawares by that, and that patient had adverse effects of that drug interaction. So I think that's an important one to be aware of. And there may be other medications that have drug interactions with cannabidiol or indeed with other cannabinoids.
Thanks, Terrific. Kate. Thanks, Jeremy. Thank you for your time.
Cheers.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.